cards start happening soon?
Yes, you rewound it more than I did. I had this all set up, and you ruined
it.
You ruined it. Yes, I rewound it back to da-da-da-da-da, and then it would have gone into words, but you ruined it. Ruiner. I know what I'm doing.
Linoleum knife. Welcome.
Welcome to Linoleum knife.
That's Dave White, destroyer of worlds.
I think I'm sweet.
You are, which is the only reason I don't strangle you on a daily basis. Flannery O'Connor style.
I thought maybe... Here's what I thought. I thought that starting it from a less beat-oriented section of the song... Mm-hmm. Look, it's your fault, really.
No. I knew this song had a super long intro, and that's why I played it all the way to when the vocals started, and then I went backwards a little. And then you proceeded to ruin everything the way you do. And you just... By the way, Dave White just broke a glass... Like in the last 5 minutes, so you're on a roll today.
I'm really good at breaking things, breaking glasses and plates and stuff. Although
you love the sound of breaking glass,
I
especially when you're lonely.
I trip a lot over things. I knock things over and down and off of tables.
You spill things on clothing.
I spill things on clothing. Although I was just at the laundromat this morning, and you.
Yes, this week I had a bad week.
You had a bad week.
I learned that...
You had an eating disorder.
Yes. I learned that Taco Bell is not good drive-thru food.
Taco Bell,
well, it's
Taco
not
Bell
good,
is
period.
Not good.
Yeah, but it's especially not designed to be eaten while you're driving.
I can't believe you did that.
I don't
Why
know.
Why? What were you thinking?
I was really hungry, and the one that I went to in like North Hollywood had two tables that were occupied, so I just took it to go.
Then? You go out and you sit in your car,
yeah. Well,
and you sit in the parking lot. You cover yourself with the Taco Bell napkins, mm-hmm. which they provide for free.
Yes. Well, to quote Nicolas Cage in Honeymoon in Vegas, I know that now.
You knew it before.
Well, yeah.
You just chose to destroy almost possibly.
Who has a 6:30 screening?
It's like a 4:45 screening this week.
Yeah, fine, but you have dinner after a 4:45 screening. A 6:30 screening before is too early unless you're an old man like
you. 4:45, and then I had a little post dinner.
Right. Well, I did not snack in advance. They even had like a little reception set up, but I knew I was going to have to wait for the Q&A to be over to get to the reception. So I just went the heck with it and went home.
Right. Did we say that
this is
the
riveting?
Show?
Yes, you did. It's
the
Linoleum
name of the
Knife.
The show is Linoleum Knife, and we are a podcast of the cinema.
As you can tell from the highfalutin conversation we've been having so far.
I am Dave. I'm sorry, wait. I'm Keira Knightley. I've got dibs on Keira Knightley.
Fine. No one's fighting you for that one. Dave's referring to my I'm Alonzo Duraldi of therap.com.
Oh, yeah, and I'm the film critic for movies.com. Not themovies.com.
Movies.com.
Dave's
referring
You're the film critic for therap.com.
Correct. Dave's referring to my Facebook post this week where I suggested that next Halloween I would get a group of 30 people together and we would go as the cast of Love Actually. So Dave has already got dibs on Keira Knightley, which would make me, she would tell SU4 by default, but I don't know that I necessarily have to embrace that, so I could be somebody else. I'm leaning towards Second Lobster.
If I can't be Keira Knightley, I want to be Hugh Grant's Chocolate Biscuits.
Ah, well, okay. We could be the Pointer Sisters.
No. I'm either Keira Knightley... Or I am Chocolate Biscuits.
That movie offers so many options.
Maybe I'm the violent, mentally ill brother.
You could totally be the violent, mentally ill brother.
I could be the violent, mentally ill brother
yes.
who hits Laura Linney.
Yeah.
Will you be Laura Linney so I can hit you?
No, I think I might carry around a basket of sandwiches. Or maybe put on a cowboy hat and be Denise Richards. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to go on this. You know that January Jones is one of the American Girls.
Oh, I know.
Oh, you know.
I know all kinds of things about that movie.
Celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, believe it or not.
10 glorious years.
Mm-hmm.
of being not a good film,
but irresistible,
and yet one that I cannot stop watching.
No, I know it is
every year I must see this film.
It is a kind of a toxic feel good movie because, as somebody has pointed out, at least three of the major storylines have to do with men falling in love with their employees.
Yes,
you know, the Hugh Grant one, the Alan Rickman one, and the Colin Firth one.
Here's what it is. It's Emma Thompson.
Well, yes.
Emma Thompson guts me.
Emma Thompson crying to both sides now is, you know.
Emma Thompson guts me every year. And every year I watch it and I think, oh, poor Emma Thompson. Snape.
Stupid Snape. Stupid Hans Gruber.
That's right. And so...
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Alan Rickman's got a holiday twofer.
He's a bad man at the holidays.
Because Die Hard turns 25 this year.
Yes.
So, yeah. By the way, my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas,
yeah,
still available
way,
on
yes,
Amazon.
Yes, yes.
And you can buy it from us directly,
Let
and I'll
tell
sign
you
it
about
for
this.
You.
This is a special thing that you should know. Halloween's over.
Yeah.
Or as I like to call it, not Christmas number one.
Right.
In a few weeks, we've got not Christmas number two.
Yes.
A little food bump in the road until Christmas. But the shopping event of Christmas begins right now. And here's what you need to do. Perhaps you have loved ones, or maybe you are yourself, your own loved one, who wants an amazing book that's all about Christmas movies. And not just the ones you know. Christmas movies that are... You didn't even know, A, that these existed, B, that they were set at Christmas, C, that they had anything to do with Christmas, but they do.
And D, that they're awesome.
And that an awesome person wrote this book, and it was published by who?
Limelight Editions.
Limelight Editions published this book. So it wasn't even self-published.
No.
Which is a surprise.
Someone else paid money for
this. A person really wanted to publish this book. And it's so great. It's called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And its author is Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com, who's sitting across this table from me right now.
And the Linoleum Knife Podcast.
Here's what happens when you buy this book from us directly at Christmas time. First of all, you get the pleasure of paying full retail. For that pleasure,
which is good for the economy,
you get it autographed by Alonzo Duralde.
Personalized.
You get a special little note from Alonzo Duralde. Also, because you're buying it thanks to the Linoleum Knife Podcast, you get special sort of Christmas little things attached to it. Things that are Christmassy, that are sort of tucked into the pages. It might even come gift-wrapped, like it's a gift that you are giving to somebody, or maybe even yourself. Anything can happen. Christmas surprises happen when you buy this book through us. And if you want it, all you got to do, and how much is it? $17 plus $3 shipping, and even 20.
Yeah, 20 bucks.
20 bucks. Because it's, what's it retail, $16.99?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. $16.99, $3 shipping, $19.99.
Just make it 20.
Email or 20, whatever, if you want to give us that extra penny. If you haven't got a penny, a hey penny will do. If you haven't got a hey penny, God bless you. You want it, you can email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
It's worth noting.
You should do that because you've got 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
7 weeks.
Till Christmas.
7 weeks. You don't have a lot of time. You better start giving this gift to a lot of people. Wouldn't everyone that you know love this present? This beautiful book? Yes, they would. What were you going to say?
I was
going
to say, as Dave struggles to remember our email address, I want to mark the occasion that this is our third anniversary on the air.
Mm.
We started this
Three
show
years.
The first week of November
Three
2010.
Years of me not remembering
Dave
the email
still
address.
Doesn't know our email address. So yeah, if you know, check out my book. It's a nifty stocking stuffer, and if you are a fan of Christmas
movies,
it's
too big to fit into an actual stocking.
Well, I suppose.
Probably, unless you have one of those giant We were in Target
this morning. The stretchy yarn ones.
We were in Target this morning, and they have these giant-ass, yarny, stretchy stockings that you can buy now.
You could put a bowling ball in one.
Every year, I'm tempted to upgrade the stockings, because Alonzo and I are very big on the stocking tradition. And each year, I sort of get all bent out of shape, because, like, I spend the whole year buying little tiny things.
Yeah, you play Christmas Tetris with the stocking.
That go into the stocking, and I sock them away into the closet, the shelf of secrets in the closet. And then on the 24th, I'm like, oh, dang, I'm trying to fit everything in, and I have to get strategic and placement-y with stuff. And every year, you've got this beautiful vintage Christmas stockings, like from the 50s or whatever. Yeah. And every year I think, we got to upgrade. And then I look at your stocking and think, but it's so good. Stocking is so great. I'll never upgrade this. In fact, we took it to be mended one year because it got a hole in it. Because I jabbed through it with a present. So I guess you're just going to get what you get in your stocking. And if I have extras, I'll just save it for next year.
Fair enough. I can live with that. Now's a great time to buy my book for yourself if you want to find out some cool new movies to watch this Christmas. If you're sick of the same old, same old. Makes a gift, a great gift for friends.
Yes.
And we are also getting very close to making...
You're a secret Santa.
Yes. We're also getting very close to making Linoleum Knife t-shirts available, with any luck.
That'll probably happen after Christmas.
You think?
Probably.
I was kind of hoping... Maybe. I thought we would shoot for Christmas.
We could shoot for December. I don't know. Maybe.
It's the most retail time of the year.
I know.
We should do it now if we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So there's that. So we'll keep you posted.
If we get to it, those might be available.
Right.
No promises.
So, since we've been talking about Love Actually, you want to start with About Time?
Sure.
Which opened in limited release this weekend. It's the latest film from Richard Curtis, who wrote and directed Love Actually. He wrote and directed Notting Hill and wrote Four Weddings and a Funeral. And he also did that pirate radio on a boat movie that we won't talk about.
So not a good movie.
So this is kind of along his wheelhouse of sort of posh quippiness.
Sure is.
Only this one's got time travel thrown in. You want to explain it?
Gleason.
Somebody sent me a link on how to pronounce his name, and I didn't look.
His name is pronounced Domhnall Gleason. And I think he's the son.
Is silent, perhaps.
You know, why is it in there then? Other than being Irish.
Yeah, go tell the UK, you know.
His father is the actor
Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson from the Harry Potter movies.
And the general.
And Domhnall was also a Weasley in one of the Weasley brothers.
He was.
In the Harry Potter movies.
The older one.
The one who
gets married. He was also. I just saw him in something called Shadow Dancer with Clive Owen and Andrea Riseborough.
So Domhnall. finds out from his father, Bill Nighy, that the men in their family can time travel. And there are some rules. They can only go back...
To places
where they've already been. And they can only go back to the past. They cannot go to the future. And later, Domhnall learns that there's another rule that is involved in the time travel.
Oh, right.
But I won't give away what that rule is because it comes with a little... Surprise.
Yeah.
But what he... What
so he falls in love with Rachel
McAdams. He falls in love with Rachel McAdams. And he pretty much orchestrates it so that he gets her.
Yeah.
Like, she's got a good at one point, and then he screws up a moment where he misses...
Meeting her.
Doesn't cross her path in the right way. So he organizes his life so that he gets her, which is, you know, great. If you're going to use time travel, you should use it that way.
Sure.
And here's the thing about the time travel in this film. It is the time travel you would get in a Richard Curtis movie. It is because his films, except for that terrible one about the boat with the radio station on it, his movies are about posh people and or stylish people who are almost posh.
Right.
They fall in love.
Say awkward things in conversation.
They're clever and witty. Ish, most of the time.
Yeah.
Everyone lives in these great places. Even if they live in little flats,
yeah,
they're great. They're like the set decorator gets to do whatever they want. You know, like it's just like the eccentric little quirky apartments with these gorgeous homes, or
it's like a Michael. So much. It's like a Michael Mann movie where everybody lives in, you know,
this. Yeah, Michael Mann movies, people live really in these very sort of sleek environments.
Right, but
Richard Curtis, there's it's moneyed, British, moneyed mumsy. Yeah, and
I just mean in terms of people living in places way outside of their.
And then there's always one, you know, heartbreaking thing that happens, as we discussed recently with Emma Thompson and Snape, and the thing is that. So in a time travel added to this sort of genre involves clenching your fists real hard, like you're going to have a really cute little tantrum, and then you go inside the
in a wardrobe,
the closet from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and then you go back in time and you fix getting laid, essentially. Like, did it not go perfectly the first time? Oh, you go back and get it again.
Right.
Oh, did it go okay that next time? All right, well, go back and make sure that it you knock it out of the park the next time. So it's like that. And the story meanders. There's not a whole lot of plot,
not much,
really.
No.
But it's very sweet, and it's very, you know, kind-hearted. And it's not as funny as any of the other Richard Curtis movies.
No.
It's not as good as any of the other Richard Curtis movies. But I like them so much. I really like them.
Here's the thing. Well, A, I can't...
Chocolate biscuits.
I can't believe Rachel McAdams agreed to be in this movie, having already been in The Time Traveler's Wife.
Dude, she also agreed to be in The Vow.
Well, I'm not saying that, like, she's the...
She knows what she's
I'm
doing.
Not saying she's the toughest nut to crack.
She was in Morning Glory.
We liked Morning Glory.
I'm saying that I'm okay with this.
I'm saying she's kind of played this role before. My thing with this movie is, here's the thing that's missing from those three other Richard Curtis movies that we love so much. Hugh Grant.
No, here's the thing that's not missing from those three other movies that's missing from this one.
Right, sorry, I said that wrong.
Yes.
Yes. Here's the thing from those three other movies that's missing. This movie has a Hugh Grant-shaped hole in it, and he tries to fill it with Domhnall Gleeson.
And he's fine. But he's fine.
He is, but he is... It is like...
Be nice to him.
I got nothing against Domhnall Gleeson, but he is being directed to be Hugh Grant.
I disagree.
No, I totally... I'm right about this.
You came home from your screening and you said, oh, he's just trying to be Hugh Grant. I'm like, no, it's not. If you close your eyes on the narration, there's a bit of a cadence situation where he does speak in the Hugh Grantian way.
When he says, gosh... I'm like, oh, come on. This is like this is like watching one of those Woody Allen movies where Kenneth Branagh or Will Ferrell decides they're going to be Woody Allen. Yeah. He is super channeling Hugh Grant. And I'm sorry, Domhnall Gleeson, for all the things you have going for you, you ain't no Hugh Grant.
This is an adorable little movie.
It's not adorable enough, and it's not little enough. It goes on and on.
It does also
on.
Do that. All right. Fine.
I'm not saying that if you like have the flu and you're on the sofa and it comes on HBO, it wouldn't be just the perfect thing to kind of doze off of during and then wake back up enjoy.
If this weren't my living, I would go see this at like a matinee or whatever, all alone in my sweats. I just woke up, got a baseball cap on. Everything's all... I smell good, you know.
That's great.
Take a bowl of Cap'n Crunch with me into the theater.
This is like the It's a Wonderful Life version of You if I hadn't married you. This is Mary is closing up the library. You going to see About Time by yourself at a matinee in sweats.
It's essentially the same way that you're supposed to go see P.S. I Love You.
Yeah, no, this is totally a I'm sick and it's on HBO movie. And on that level, it's totally acceptable.
I liked it much more than you did.
You did? Yes. Yeah. I do like
Richard
Curtis.
The two ladies that I know of who've seen this, well, they cried.
I'm sure they did.
There are some cryy moments.
There are some cryy moments. There are some. It's one of those movies like.
Who plays Bill Nighy's wife? Who plays the mom?
Oh, she's so good.
She's great.
I forget now her name, but yeah, she's terrific. What was the movie that I saw recently where it was kind of like they were going to make you cry, whether it was about daddy-son issues or about, like, mother-daughter. Like, they throw in everything, figuring that one of them is going to stick to the wall and make you cry.
No, no, no.
But anyway, this does the same thing. Maybe this was the one I was writing about. I wrote about it. I reviewed this ages ago, so, you know, they all blur together now. So, yeah, if you are super, super in the Richard Curtis tank, then, you know, you'll get... you'll get minor Richard Curtis.
I kind of am super in the tank.
And I thought I was too, but now I realize I have a, you know, your line is the radio station on a boat movie, and I think my line is this one.
Okay, speaking of hardcore lesbian scissoring sex scenes.
As we were, yes.
I saw Blue is the Warmest Color yesterday.
Good, finally.
It's 3 hours long.
It sure is. And French.
It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
Mm-hmm. It is based on a graphic novel that I have not read.
I liked it.
I liked it.
I'm still thinking about it. I may like it more or less as time goes on.
I keep thinking about it. And again, it's one of those movies where I think during the second half I started losing interest. And during the fabled sex scenes, I thought they were not... They went on too long.
No, they were great.
They made their point, and
no,
they could have.
They were awesome.
But I will say that when it was over, I felt like the movie had a sort of a okay, stop it, stop it.
I'm sorry, I'm not done with my lesbian sex scene.
Yeah, we have another 10 minutes. I felt like when it was over, it did have a certain cumulative power to it.
They hump it so hard in those scenes. Like they're really having sex. Like that's real sex that they're having. You don't get to see any penetration, but
yeah,
almost do, and it's there.
Well, I keep hearing about prosthetic genitalia, and I'm like, I didn't see any genitalia.
There was no prosthetic. No, you saw the genitalia, and there was no prosthetic genitalia.
That's what they keep saying. Really? They said it at my screening, and they said it in that article that I just read on Gawker or wherever where the gay guy and the lesbian talked about.
So they had a fake vagina on top of her real vagina?
Apparently. I didn't see the fake one. Did I blink?
You weren't looking hard enough.
I guess. Maybe I had my hands over my eyes.
My eyes are peeled all the time. for lady parts. For all the parts. Like, vaginas, penises, balls.
You are really testing our clean this
taints.
Week.
I'm always looking for them.
So, just because the movie is NC-17, this is still a clean podcast.
I'm only using the clinical terms.
I know.
Taint is what they call it in medical school. Ask any number of your siblings about this fact. It's a true fact.
Taintus majorum.
So, okay. Getting the sex scenes out of the way.
Yes.
They're fantastic. Here's why. They go on forever. They are literally like 10 minutes of sex scenes.
I think it's 10 minutes total, and the longest one is 7.
Well,
apparently.
It's
someone timed this.
It's great. You can't. There aren't enough movies in the world with extremely explicit sex in them. Non-pornographic.
No, films. I agree.
And I believe that almost every R. If you're going to give me an R-rated film or an NC-17 movie, you better have a whole gang of sex scenes in there.
You might as well go to Horny Town.
Lots of it. Lots and lots and lots. I want there to be. Here's part of my ongoing manifesto. I'm going to add an element to my manifesto of life and the cinema. Mm-hmm. For every killing and murder and decapitation and disembowelment and brutal thing that I see in films, and I do love that stuff, I want to see people getting it on. Well, I want those actors to not even use prosthetics. I want them to really do it on camera.
A movie that I liked more than you last year was I Want Your Love, and that was a film that had explicit sex in it,
what I liked about it.
But it propelled the plot and it told you things about the characters.
There was not much plot.
But it was more revelatory about the characters, and I kind of felt like in this movie, yes, the sex does that, but the sex does that after about 4 minutes, and then you still get another 3, you know, and that was my only...
So, getting the sex out of the way.
Okay.
I liked this film more in the second half, and here's why.
Really?
I felt like the complications that arose in their lives and the aftermath of their relationship was far more interesting.
We should back up a little and explain what this movie's about.
A 17-year-old lesbian and a, what,
21-year-old
lesbian?
Yeah, the first half of the
in
film...
In France.
Our heroine, Adele, who's played by
Adele Lakachakalakabalabalaka.
Exarchopoulos is her last name, but I forget what her first name is.
Adele. Her name is Adele. Oh, no,
the character and
her
the actress,
name
her name
is
Adele?
Also Adele.
Okay.
Yes.
So Adele Exarchopoulos is a closeted high school student. You know, she dates a guy.
Well, she doesn't know she's closeted. She just kind of figures it out.
Right. Okay. Yeah. She's not closeted. Yeah. She's sort of, you know, confused and coming
of age. She never tells her parents.
So she dates this guy in high school and has sex with him and like doesn't really get turned on by it all.
Nope.
But she sees Emma, this blue-haired art student played by Lea Seydoux, in the street and immediately starts fantasizing about her, and eventually rigs it to where they meet and they start dating, and they become a thing, and you know, there's some minor sort of coming out drama with like her fellow high school students, but it's mainly just about kind of, you know, getting into the relationship. And then the second half of the movie, several years have passed. Adele has graduated from high school, but she didn't go to college. She's working as like a nursery school teacher. Emma has finished art school and is starting to get out into the world and being shown in galleries and running around with fancy art people. And Adele feels more and more not a part of her life and not sort of, you know, keeping up with her. And, you know, it's about the ups and downs of their relationship as adults after that sort of first flush of young love. And it gets a lot of that stuff right, and I think it feels very honest. I mean, there's this whole weird, crazy back and forth between the director and the actresses who apparently now hate each other. But I've been trying to just tune all that out and just take the movie for what it is. And yeah, I mean, as a relationship movie, I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of great stuff to it. But I found the second half not as compelling as the first half, but you felt the opposite.
Yeah, I really did. I really was into the post, you know, lovey-dovey part of it. And I really feel that in general, this is not simply a film about these two young women, but it's about being young now in France.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's changing on so many levels. It's changing economically and socially. And you see that sort of around the perimeter of the story. You see them, you know, in the streets protesting austerity measures and, you know, dancing to like Northern African, you know, Algerian kind of music, and the old France, the old Catherine Deneuve France that really is gone unless you're older, white, and rich.
Right.
Is being replaced by
the Amelie France.
That is the Amelie France. It's being replaced by this whole bunch of other, you know, people and cultures and styles. And so I think part of the film is about that. And that's the part I really wish maybe that there had been more of in it. But I really did like the long slowness of this relationship because it really did allow the movie the time to dig into the sort of forever feeling that it, like, when you're young and you're in love and you think that's it.
Right. That's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story, and you can't think of anything past that. And so this film really does, this is the wrong word, but it sort of wallows in that. And I'm really, I really appreciated that because so few films capture the sort of infinite quality that exists inside the minds of the very young person in love.
Hmm.
And the inability of that young person to see past it, which is why Adele, 2 years plus afterwards,
mm-hmm.
can't stop crying about it. So
I might need to see this again with my, you know, with my Jean Dielman hat on.
Yeah.
You know, just being ready for it to be long and slow and you know, deliberate. But I like it. I get why people are excited about this movie, and I totally think people should see it. I'm just not like, greatest thing ever. You know?
Right. Okay, Ender's Game.
All right, let's talk Ender's Game.
Well, you didn't see it.
I did not see it, and I don't...
Tell me all about it, Alonso.
Okay. I am not, like, shouting from the rooftops that people should boycott this movie. I didn't bother me that you saw it, that you reviewed it. I read the book in college. I was a fan of the book. I read several of the sequels. I used to like Orson Scott Card. And then,
don't care.
And then it turned out that Orson Scott Card is a lunatic and is a super...
Yeah.
Like, super anti-gay, thinks that there should be armed rebellion if gay marriage becomes the law of the land, sits on the board of the National Organization of Marriage.
And they are loons.
Yes. As a sidebar, compared Obama to Hitler, thinks that gay people are the result of abuse, just all kinds of stuff like that. And I just thought, okay, if I see this movie and I like it, then my recommendation could potentially sell tickets, which, even though I love the spin of the studio, I don't know if we've ever seen this from a studio in marketing before. Don't worry, Orson Scott Card's not going to make any money from your ticket sales.
I really like that. That's really a funny sort of, like,
which is totally false. Totally false.
It is false.
Even if he doesn't make money from your specific movie sale, the success of Ender's Game sells more books for him.
Yes, it does.
Drives up the price of his future rights sales.
Yep.
So, of course, he makes money on it. And then if I didn't like it, I thought that I would just be accused of going in with an axe to grind because I'm a gay film critic and obviously, you know, I was never going to like this movie and I just hate Orson Scott Card.
And you really are gay first before you're anything else.
Absolutely. It completely defines my identity and I have nothing else to offer the world. So that was sarcasm. I just felt like it was a no-win situation, and I didn't want to do it. And yes, people go, what about Roman Polanski? What about Woody Allen? It's like, okay, yes, obviously we have to make the decision at some point that we can't over... That there are certain artists that we're like... that we have to sort of deal with their awfulness or else we couldn't see anything because everybody's objectionable in one way or other. I will say this on Roman Polanski's behalf. He has never actively given money or advocated for teenage girl rape. It's a thing he did, and
struck out on his own.
And it's deplorable.
He started his own club of one.
It's deplorable that he did it, but he's not out there like rallying the masses to make teenage rape more acceptable. Orson Scott Card is out there raising money for groups that are trying to screw our lives over. And you know, so that's where I draw the line. If you draw the line at Roman Polanski, I totally understand that, and I respect that decision. My decision is to not go see Ender's Game or review it. Dave White?
I saw it.
Saw it and reviewed it.
And I reviewed it. I don't have the luxury of picking and choosing which wide releases that I
This is like the review. One time I've ever given one up for this reason.
So
luckily I have other people.
You can give up anything you want to any of the other critics for the Wrap, like, because you're the boss critic at the Wrap. But
I don't. This is the first and probably only time that that's come up. But yes, luckily Todd Gilchrist was able to go see it for us, and so I was.
And he's a homophobe.
He is not.
It's spelled Gilchrist. Hates gays.
Please, he is a hetero dandy.
I know he is. He is great.
He puts some effort into that.
He likes his outfits.
He likes an ensemble. Mr. Gilchrist.
So anyway, Todd Gilchrist is a righteous dude.
And has been a guest on this show.
Yeah. So anyway, I saw it and I reviewed it, and even if I hadn't seen it to review, I would buy a ticket to go see this movie, and here's why. Orson Scott Card is going to do with his money whatever he decides he's going to do. If he wants to throw it away on these idiotic, you know, ballot initiatives and giving money to these terrible, terrible, horrible, despicable groups, let him. They lost. Currently, the barge is moving faster probably than it's ever moved. And while there is not marriage equality or employment opportunity equality or housing protections yet, in every state, it's moving in that direction. And it's sort of not going to stop. You know, provided that Ted Cruz or Sarah Palin don't become the president of the United States, it's not going to stop. They lost. It's just a matter of time until they officially lose. they will be in the sidebar of history as, look at these weird, sad people who tried to stop human equality. And so whatever they do with their money doesn't really affect, you know, my opinion of the thing that they, you know, right, created. Here's the other thing.
Although I just want just a quick sidebar.
Yes.
It's interesting that we're the
interruption.
You're between points. Keep, I wanted to throw it out real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, keep going.
No. Talk.
No.
Yes. Talk. By all means, please do. Please.
What I was going to say was that we're still the, like, we still get to be controversial and discussed. If he were, say, against mixed race marriage or were anti-Semitic, yes, we would not be having this conversation. Right. He either would be completely persona non grata, or only like the craziest fringy Tea Party guys would even be defending his right to his opinion.
Apocalypto and an anti-Semite made that film.
Right, but he's not on the board of, you know, let's
the damn
export all the Jews.
He's a big money giver to the Catholic Church, and they're not helping us either. They're not helping the Jews either.
Yeah, well, I'm not even getting into cards Mormonism either.
So what I'm saying is, eat at Chick-fil-A if you want, and go see Ender's Game if you want, and watch a Mel Gibson movie if you want, and listen to Burzum, if you want. That's a band I like. A band I like. Guess what that guy did? He murdered somebody, went to prison, became a neo-Nazi. You know what? His music is still rad. Listen to Ted Nugent, if you like. The people who are doing the terrible things in the world are, first of all, they're individuals. And whatever they waste their money on, they're going to waste their money on. Here's my second point. My second point is, the conversation that keeps going because of this film is one that can only hurt him. The book sales may go up. He may get more money for another film project. Fine. That money will get thrown away on Maggie Gallagher. The point of Ender's Game is one of humanity, of shared humanity, of being thoughtful and intelligent and a striving to loving your enemies. What does that mean, to love your enemy? Do you destroy them? Do you delight in seeing them destroyed by somebody else? The moral of this film is something that Orson Scott Card used to know. He used to have it inside him. Mm. He no longer has it inside him. But he put it in a book. And now that book is a movie that will be seen by more people than will ever read that book. It will have more influence over the culture than he ever will. The fact that this movie exists is good for the ongoing discussion of, who is my neighbor? How should I treat my neighbor? How should I treat that alien race from another world? Should I blow them up in a video game simulation that I think is fake and turns out to be real? Or should I?
Did you just spoil the ending of the movie?
I don't know. Maybe. Who cares? Most of our listeners aren't going to see it anyway.
They aren't now. Well done.
Should we go back?
Catherine did it.
Should we go back?
The poster gives it away. I mean, the tagline for the movie is like, it's not a game or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
All right, whatever then. Okay, so, Ender's Game, it's not a game. He thinks it's a game. It's not a game. The performances are good. It's beautiful to look at. It's somber in ways that After Earth failed at being.
I'm a little surprised because it's
really, really good.
It's directed by the guy that made X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I don't know how it compares to the book, and I don't care.
I wasn't bringing that up. But the director made that Tsotsi movie that was kind of.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine movie that was awful.
This is a good film, and I'm into it. I'm also into the idea that It is created by a person who is now full of hateful thoughts and deeds.
Who could no longer write that book.
Who could no longer write that book. Hmm. And that book and that story and that moral will supersede him. Hmm. As he is a sad person. Hmm. He is a sad, angry person who says and does sad, angry things. And I don't have to think about him anymore.
I might watch it on cable one day.
Yes.
We'll see. Also this week, Freebirds.
God. The end.
It's
Freebirds.
I don't use the word rotten a lot in talking about movies outside of Rotten Tomatoes. This is a rotten film.
Yeah, it is.
It's just terrible. Yeah. And just stupid and pointless and not funny and flirts with bigger ideas that it's not remotely prepared to deal with.
Talk about it, because I don't even care enough to talk about it.
Ugh, all right, so Owen Wilson is this turkey who realizes that they're being fattened up for the kill, but all the other turkeys are like, what? No, corn. This is great. And then when they do figure out they're going to be slaughtered, since he's the outsider from the flock, they throw him out of the house to be the turkey pen to be sacrificed. But no, he is pardoned by the president and taken to Camp David, where he soon falls in love with pizza and telenovelas. But before he can get too comfy, Woody Harrelson comes along and kidnaps him on this crazy mission involving a time machine that they're going to take to Plymouth Colony in the 17th century to get turkey off the menu at the first Thanksgiving, thus saving centuries of turkeys from slaughter. I don't even think they actually had turkey at the first Thanksgiving.
Who knows? But I think
it's a historical myth.
I can't even get with that premise. You don't get rid of my turkey on Thanksgiving. You pull back a stump. You got to take away my third turkey on Thanksgiving.
You know, and so then like they go back in time, and the 1600s turkeys are actually resourceful and smart and you know, turkeys of action as opposed to the fat, lazy, stupid ones of today. And as Bibbs was saying, what is this movie saying about Native Americans, which is clearly the metaphor going on
here? Yeah, yeah, no, it's like this horrible Trail of Tears sort of metaphor. Yeah, it's just, it's not good.
No, it
is. And they weren't even thinking
about that. And they don't know that they're doing
it. That wasn't even part of the plan, I know, but...
And they're certainly not interested in time travel paradoxes, which would you think
would come up. I did like the part where three other Owen Wilson turkeys pop up and they're like, I'm from the future.
That's the one time they even addressed that, you know, like the butterfly effect is not mentioned in this film. They don't care what they do in the past.
They do mention it in About Time.
Yes.
And Bill Nye's like, yeah, it doesn't happen. Like, that's how they dispense with it.
Yeah.
Because Dom Nall Gleason says, what about the butterfly? And he's like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. About Time is a better time travel movie than Freebirds. I will give it that for sure. Yeah, Freebirds is terrible. Don't waste your time. And then Dallas Buyers Club, which is the reason why I picked the song that you butchered for today's opening music.
Pet Shop Boys.
Yes, because when I moved to Dallas in 1989 and started going to gay bars regularly for the first time in my life, that was one of the songs I would always hear. That's one of my coming out anthems.
Great.
So anyway.
I didn't have a coming out anthem, but no.
Fine. Sucks to be you then.
Well, wait, let me think. Did I? I don't know that I did.
I just mean that it was just while I was coming out and while I was, when I would go out, that's just a song I would always hear. It's not like the lyrics have any special meaning or anything.
Right. I'd have to go back and think about what music was around then.
Was it I Want to Sex You Up by Color Me Bad?
You know, you're right, it was. It was that. And then their follow-up hit, All For Love. Well, that's a good song. So,
Dallas Buyers Club.
So, AIDS was fixed in the 80s by a straight white homophobe.
Hooray.
The end.
Yeah. So now...
That's not what the movie's about.
Yeah, well, we've finally gotten to a place where we get movies like The Butler, where it's a movie about black civil rights that is told in the through the eyes of black people and not through the eyes of some journalist who covered Stephen Biko or some white girl who got maids to tell her their stories or, you know, what have you, or the those lovely FBI, Hoover-era FBI agents who went to Mississippi to investigate exploded churches.
Yeah.
But no, so now we finally get a relatively big-budget, mainstream AIDS movie, and it's about a straight white homophobe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hollywood! And frankly, I would be more willing to forgive that if the movie were better than it is. It is not better than
it is. I think it's an okay movie. I think the performances are really good.
I like the lead performance by Matthew McConaughey. I think is terrific.
I like Jared Leto.
Jared Leto is a performance that is so crazily overrated and self-satisfied that he's got the Oscar locked up. But he's not good. He's not bad, but it is just one of those things where you can feel the, check it out, I lost weight and I'm wearing a dress.
Right.
I'm acting.
But I think he's very good. Mm. And
he's only that character is only there to teach
McConaughey
straight whitey a lesson about being a better person. He is the magic. We have a magical homo now. For years we've had magical Negroes, now we have a magical homo, who's trans. Although, frankly, when I reviewed the film, I originally referred to the character as a drag queen, because everybody keeps referring to him as he, and vaguely... I got and all these angry comments, it was a trans character, how could you make it? Like, based on the evidence I had from this movie, because all these characters, with the exception of the Matthew McConaughey character, are composites...
Yes.
Like in New York Magazine.
Yes.
You know, this
including the Jennifer Garner character,
yes,
who plays his doctor.
Right.
The reuniting of the cast of Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Ugh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, based on this movie, you have one mean doctor played by Dennis O'Hare who wants to push AZT on everybody even though it doesn't work. And you have one FDA agent for the entire state of Texas who somehow manages to always be there when McConaughey is pushing, you know, unconventional remedies in Dallas or when he's smuggling over the Mexican border. Always this one guy.
Right.
What Buyers Clubs did, explain
that.
Yeah, they actually started in New York, but that was by gay people, so you don't want to see a movie about that. In the early days of the AIDS crisis, the FDA had approved first nothing, and then they approved AZT, which was super toxic and didn't do much for anybody. So you would find out about these other treatments that were available, that were legal in other countries, that may or may not have done anything. And so what these buyers clubs would do would be to smuggle them into the United States, and then so as not to be get booked for selling drugs, they gave them away to people who paid the subscription fee to be in the club.
Yes.
So you weren't technically buying Laetril or whatever you were getting off of these guys,
right?
But as a member of the club, you had access to stuff.
Right.
And so McConaughey plays a guy named Ron Woodruff. You know, hard living, wrong side of the law, kind of scumbag, really. I mean, the movie sort of...
He's gross.
You first meet him, like, banging some trashy chick at a rodeo,
two trashy chicks at
a rodeo.
At the same time.
Yes, and then, like, welching on a bet and running off with the money,
yep,
and, you know, just he's an awful person.
Yeah.
And he gets the AIDS and is given 30 days to live, and so he starts bribing, a guy at the hospital to sneak AZT out for him, and then that doesn't really help so much, so then he winds up across the border, and this sort of defrocked doctor in Mexico played by...
Griffin Dunn.
Griffin Dunn, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Starts, you know, putting him on different sort of nutritional supplements and different treatment things, and he gets better, and he starts this Buyers Club thing, and Jared Leto plays the Rayon, this trans person with HIV who basically is his conduit into the gay community in Dallas because he's an awful homophobe. Yeah, it is another one of those feel good movies about a minority that is through the eyes of a white dude.
Yeah,
but McConaughey's really good. Beyond, you know, yes, he lost a ton of weight, but he's really effective. He does not hold back in making this character kind of a jerk. And even at the end of the movie,
more than kind of a jerk.
Yeah, a total jerk. And even at the end of the movie, after all the things that have happened, he's basically less of a jerk. He's
somewhat less of a jerk.
You know, so he's terrific, but the rest of the movie is phony baloney and contrived, and it is worth seeing for McConaughey, but that's the only reason to see it.
I was more interested in the rest of the film than you were. I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's a halfway decent movie with two very good performances. And my only complaint about that is that movies help write history. And the truth is that gay people saved themselves.
Yes.
In the 80s.
Go see How to Survive a Plague if you
watch How to Survive a Plague. Watch We Were Here. Mm-hmm. Those are two documentaries about what gay people did and lesbians, what lesbians and gay men did in the 1980s. To save themselves because nobody else was going to do it. Ron Woodruff didn't even invent the concept of the Buyers Club. Gay people did that.
Yes. Gay men's health crisis in New York started that.
Yeah. And so the...
Where's the Larry Kramer bio?
Where's the Larry Kramer movie? Honestly, where is the Larry Kramer movie?
Well, and we are getting the HBO Normal Heart this year.
Great. Fine. But still, the thing is that much like the Civil Rights Movement, white people did not start that.
No.
Black people started that. Yeah. The response to AIDS on any substantive level came from gay people. The official government around us wouldn't even talk about it. They wouldn't fund a thing. The health organizations didn't have any money for this. They weren't getting any money for this. The world just sat around and said, well, that's what gay guys get for being gay.
Exactly.
And sure, they're going to die? Great. We don't have to look at them anymore. Yeah.
And drug addicts too? Well.
Yeah. So a film like this, it bothers me not that it exists, but that it's the first one.
Granted, if it were part of a big swath of cinema on this subject, then yeah, I would say, oh, what an interesting adjunct to this story that this straight guy did this. But when it's the only one we're getting that's a narrative, it's infuriating. Also, whoever in Texas is in charge of, like, tax breaks for production needs to get on it. Because if I see one more movie that is set in Dallas and shot in New Orleans, I can't stand it. Killer Joe, also starring Matthew McConaughey, same deal. This movie, it is so obviously not Dallas. I will give credit to whoever in the crew dug up an old Guts t-shirt.
Yes.
G-U-T-S, the Gay Urban Truth Squad, which was Dallas's version of ACT UP. Uh-huh. But beyond that, there's just nothing Dallas-y about this movie.
So what is that the last movie you were talking about?
We had, let's see, it was Ender's Game.
I think it is.
Ender's Game, Free Bird, About Time, Dallas Buyers Club, Blue is the Warmest Color, and...
I guess that's it.
No, wait, we said there were six.
Was there?
This is why I tell you to write this stuff down.
Las Vegas!
So easy to forget.
Las Vegas is not good.
No.
And it's not the worst thing you'll ever see in your life. I mean, let's take 60 seconds on this.
It's the kind of movie you would have taken your mom to.
Yes.
And she would have been perfectly entertained, and you would have not been totally praying for death.
I would have walked out of it with her. Here's what would have happened. I would have walked out of it with her. I would have pushed her out in her chair. Mm-hmm. And I would have said, how'd you like that? And she'd go, meh, meh, meh.
It is very memorable.
That would be my mother's review.
I do not.
I'm sorry. My mom, for new listeners, my mother, who passed away last year, for the last 8 years of her life, she had a stroke. She had a stroke and lived with the effects of it, and she lost her ability to speak, but not to vocalize or communicate. So I would talk to her, and she would respond, right back to me. And so that would be how
and Dave could totally read
and all of them. I knew all the tones. I was good.
I do not blame the stars. And they're the only thing that makes this thing worth watching at all.
Oh, yeah.
They're a lot
Kevin
of fun.
Kevin Kline is alive in this movie, and he's trying so hard, clearly ad-libbing most
probably
things.
So. You know, Morgan Freeman gets a dance sequence. Why shouldn't he?
No, it's barely a dance sequence.
Still, he is 76
Earth,
years
Wind,
old.
Earth, Wind, and Fire gets a September sequence, and Morgan Freeman sort of shuffles around.
Morgan Freeman does like a good 8 count, and he's 76, so I count that as a thing. Right, you know, even Michael Douglas and Robert De Niro, who can be kind of smarmy, they're fine, you know. But the movie is, I mean, and yes, okay, it's not Old Dogs. It could have been worse, but it's just...
It could have been way worse.
It's a big bowl of nothing.
It's just not good. It's not interesting. It's cute on the level of... You know, you're utterly bored.
It is cinematic and sure.
And, yeah. You're utterly bored, but when it's over, you just say, it's cute, I guess. I
chuckled a few times,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but honestly, I didn't chuckle at all.
I chuckled a few times. The guy next to me who was wearing, I tweeted that he said yes to every, like, fragrance sample person at the department store.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was roaring. Just slapping his knee over the dumbest stuff. But yeah, so the four leads are good. Mary Steenburgen is fine.
Stiff dialogue, bad script.
Joanna Gleason in her couple of scenes is fine. But yeah, this is super contrived and phony baloney.
Four old dudes go to Vegas for one last time together. Mm. Like, because they're in their 70s, they're all in perfect health, so of course they're going to die soon.
Well, they never refer to it as a last thing,
though. The title does, the title does. The title's like, you know, it's like a more... The comedy. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It does obey the Dennis Hensley rule of old people in films always having a table full of stuff next to their chair or bed.
the bedside table.
Yeah. Every time you see a bedside table, like by Robert De Niro or Morgan Freeman in the opening scenes.
Right. There's like, medications. Well,
there's like medications and creams and ointments and tissues and like a remote and a... Find a word, you know, like this. Everything is terrible. Yeah. When we get old, we are not doing that. We are going to live stylishly until we're dead.
What's your DVD pick this week?
I don't have one because I forgot. So the end. Killer Joe. Watch Killer Joe. It's so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is A Chicken Run. If you're going to see a movie about revolutionary poultry... Forget Freebirds.
Do it.
Watch Chicken Run.
Yeah, watch Chicken Run. That's a good movie.
We have some letters.
I got a bunch of letters. Let's whip right through a few of them here.
But we could always use more. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, so the Fukushima-like fallout from Jack Morrissey continues. This week we have some pro-Jack Morrissey stuff. Hi, guys. Jack Morrissey, if you're listening, did you ever once in the moments that you were sitting at our table think that you would be the lightning rod for so much audience response?
For controversy?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Longtime listener of your podcast. I listened to your latest. Want to add my voice to urge you to bring back Jack Morrissey. Contrary to some who thought it was your worst episode, I thought it was fun and engaging. Jack is nearly as knowledgeable and opinionated as you two, and he italicizes the word nearly. Oh. I'm not just Deanna Vreelanding that one on my own.
No, he knows way more than we do about a lot of things.
No apologies or explanations needed. Just like the negative comments about the chats between you two on your show, it's your show. You get to bring any guest on you want. Bring Jack back. If a listener doesn't like your choices, find another podcast. Wow. Enough said. Great job, guys. That's from Steve.
Well, thanks, Steve.
In Olympia. Thank you, Steve, in Olympia. This is from Bob. Hey, gents. He gave us a link to a thing about a female model who gets jobs modeling men's clothing as a dude.
Oh, I don't know that I saw this one.
Yeah. He linked to that story, and then he said, someone needs to take this and write a screenplay for Tootsie 2 starring Hilary Swank with Dustin Hoffman as her manager. On a completely unrelated topic, have you seen Charlie Chaplin's The Kid?
Chaplin.
Did I say Chaplin?
You said Chapman.
Chapman. Charlie Chaplin's The Kid, a wonderful and touching silent movie, written, scored, directed, and starring Chaplin with Jackie Coogan as the kid.
I have not.
That's from Bob in Omaha.
Yeah, no, I hear it is a classic. That's the movie that actually inspired the Coogan Law.
That's one I still haven't seen yet.
Because Jackie Coogan's
a
money.
A classic we have overlooked.
That movie made Jackie Coogan a child movie star, and then his parents took all of his money.
Mm.
And so then that's the Coogan Law was the first in a series of legal steps taken to protect child performers and keeping their money from being drained away by adults.
I see.
But no, I need to see The Kid. That's one of the Chaplin movies I have not seen.
This is from Tim. Apparently, we were talking about the Oscars at some point. When did we talk about the
Oscars?
With
Jack.
Oh, with Jack. All right. He says, hello. I gave up paying attention to the Oscars when Gandhi was nominated for Best Hair and Makeup and won for Best Costume. The guy's bald and wearing a towel.
Look, Candace Bergen does not just walk on sets to be Margaret Bork White. There's some primping. And you know what? That Nehru jacket, you know, those things don't make themselves. So they weren't giving it for Gandhi's costume. But I see your point.
Yes. Okay. This is from Katie, who's written the show before. We like Katie. Hey, guys. I was sad you had no letters to read last week.
Oh,
that made you sad? We're sorry for making you sad. So I figured I'd chime in. You can count me in the pro-Jack column.
Woo!
For the episode 2 weeks back. I loved all the inside baseball. And now a list. Every October, my husband and I turn our attention to horror movies, both good and bad. Well, October's over.
Yes, but what the
heck? Well, she wrote her letter before October was over. But mostly new to us. This year we managed to watch 18. Yeah, she and her husband.
Wow.
They dig in deep. Like the other other list that she sent, these are people who watch movies. Mm. Like these are not casual film viewers. So Katie, down for you.
I am jealous of people who still get to do this as a hobby.
Yeah. Haksan. This almost doesn't count as a movie. Yes, it does. Bug. Michael Shannon is great the time. Reanimator.
Mm.
Insidious.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Eyes Without a Face.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice choices.
As always, keep up the good work. Dave, I just listened to the Unfictional Live episode, and you were great. It's true, I was. I was super great on the Unfictional Live.
Thank you, Katie, for making his head swell three sizes.
If you go to kcrw.com, kcrw.org, or com, kcrw.com/unfictional, that's the name of the show, I'm on Unfictional Live, Volume 2.
Yes.
With Tig Notaro, the famous comedian lady.
And adaptation author Susan Orlean.
Yeah.
Or sorry, the Orchid Thief author Susan Orlean, whose book was turned into adaptation.
So pretty much, what I'm trying to tell you is that when you listen to me, you're listening to a somebody.
A radio star.
I'm a radio somebody now.
Which makes me video.
We're done.
Really? That's it?
That's the letters.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there are others.
Okay.
We got several others.
Yes. We have a fun one from Melbourne that I look forward to talking about on the show. But we need to watch the clip he sent us first. So, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends out there. Matt Achety and Gray Drake on Rotten Tomatoes Radio on Sirius XM. Go to ChristyLemire.com. The Frank DeCaro Show on Sirius XM OutQ, and of course Derek and Romaine on Sirius XM OutQ. We'll be back on their show pretty soon. What did I say last week? November 8th, I think.
What?
No, we're back on Derek and Romaine on November 8th.
I don't know. I'll,
I believe it's November 8th.
I'll look at the email.
The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Throwing Shade. Of course, Team Jack. We're hoping he does another episode. But in the meantime, go back and listen to the one we were on if you haven't.
Super controversial. Two-hour long podcast.
No, that was when he was on ours, when we were on his.
Oh, yeah.
The B-Movies podcast, of course, with Bibbs and Whitney. Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can stream this show at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com. Subscribe for free at iTunes, and please, please leave us a review. That really helps people find the show. It ups our presence on the podcast homepage. Film Spotting SVU actually did a very shrewd thing. They're having a contest. And to enter it, you have to leave a new review on their iTunes page between two certain dates. Whoa. Very clever, Matt and Allison. Well done. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us at Twitter, at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. And again, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with your top 10 list, your bottom 10 list. Any questions, comments, they don't have to be about Jack Morrissey necessarily. We love hearing from you. And that's also where you can drop us a line if you would like to order a copy of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. You can order directly from us and get an autographed copy. And of course, visit linoleum-knife.com, our website. We are updating it with new original material as well as links to all of our stuff at other places. At least links to my stuff at other places. Dave needs to get off his butt and
I'm off my butt. I just, it's a thing. I'm not good at things sometimes. Learning things.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll walk you through it again. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.